Session number 16722, Captain George Ledger, Reel 6.
Captain Ledger, Reel 6. How did the local people receive you?
Our first movement from the drill hole in Birtley was down to Wenstone. And originally, as soon as we moved there, we were met very, very calmly at first, until such time as the people realised where the new army arrivals had come from and who they were and what they consisted of. The DLI, being Geordies, have got a very, very nice, homely nature, as a rule, the DLI. Geordies are all the same. They have a friendly nature, which has often been misunderstood, because they were that frank and outspoken. People down south took a while for to get used with the forthrightness and the outspokenness of the Geordie lads. But the sincerity with which they were met, it was remarkable, eventually, and they were well accepted, because they used to come around and offer their services for to assist anybody who wanted any extra washing or assistance with home problems, if any of them had, and which was amazing to me for people down in the Midlands, and well, in the south, really. Anson, Charlton, Chip Norton and Charlbury, to us there were another world, and we went into another world where people spoke a different language. But they really we got on very, very well with the people in Anson. My personal opinions, recollections, was mainly through the church, because I always kept in touch with the church wherever I went. Just matter whether I was in the war, fighting the war, or I was in that, I was always remember my church. And when I became interested in the church at Enstone, which was the first thing I did, more or less when I got there, was to attend a church service, and I noticed that there were all women who were in the choir, no men. And I happened to get on talking to the choir when they came out, being nosy, wondering why where the men were. And I got on talking to one lady, and one young girl, rather, and she said, well, we've always had just ladies in here, women in the choir, but there's nothing to stop you coming in, George. If he says, if you're a choir member, you can come along and sit beside me. So I ended up by joining the choir, and I was a man sitting in a long row of seven or eight women. That was in Nenson. But to answer your question about how they were, how they mixed, I thought they mixed very, very well indeed, because the Geordies, they pushed themselves to make themselves liked. They would try and help people down there, because the people were coming forward to try and help them, and they noticed that. And the people in Anston, I found, they were really concerned, and how that in the first part of the war breaking out, they were really concerned about how these poor soldiers who had been sent away from home, who was going to look after them. And they seemed, that was the attitude they seemed to take. And they used to come and rally round and organise things for them. Parties and such like, and entertainment. And also invite them to their homes.
Did the battalion have its own entertainment as well?
Well, I cannot say the battalion had its entertainment as entertainment. At various times, on odd occasions, we had singers like Vera Lane and such like, well-known names, organised by the battalion, just for the entertainment of the troops, to stop them from getting a bit too laid back, you know, give them a little bit something to think about and to look forward to. But there wasn't a lot of entertainment. In our own case, we formed our own bar down in Enstone, and we used to have entertainment in there, put on by local people, local singers around. And the bar was really, the bar was made into out of a house, an ordinary house, and we commandeered the house to have the bar, and eventually run by the sergeant's mess.
When you commandeered a house, what happened to the family that had the house?
Well, in my case, I can't remember ever having to see a family leave a house, because the commandeering of houses was left to the upper echelon of the battalion. We had no dealings with such matters, and we only dealt with the house when it was actually empty, so we didn't have that problem to face.
Sport, did you have battalion, company, platoon sports?
No, we had lots of sports, with ample sports. We had battalion football teams, had battalion boxing teams, battalion cricket, and we used to play golf, but not a lot of golf, because the battalion and normal troops hadn't the facilities for carrying golf clubs around with them. Not a lot of that. Mainly football, cricket, and the other sports were mainly inside sports like darts, dominoes, billiards. It was billiards in those days, and snooker became favourite after the billiards.
You mentioned your own involvement with the church wherever you went. Were there other members of the battalion of a similar frame of mind?
I can never, unfortunately for me, I can never remember anybody. I never came across anybody. I was a loner. I'm not saying there weren't people who were church. I wouldn't say that at all, because everybody is alive these days that have some contact with the church. But as far as being active in the church like myself, being a church member and working in the church, I never seem to be in contact with anybody. The only contact I had with the church, with other people, was the battalion parties, the chaplains we had there. And I used to keep in contact with those when we moved around. And
who was your padre at this time? You
know, I cannot remember his name this time. Because I should remember it, because he took my New Testament off me. because that New Testament was given to me by my own church, the Bible Reading Fellowship. And I carried that in my left-hand breast pocket until I put all the names of the towns I had visited in on the back pages. And my padre had been censoring the letters, and he noticed this, and he got a hold of me, and he says, "You shouldn't be writing those things in here. In your New Testament." He says, "Could I see it?" So I showed him it, pulled it up my breast pocket. I carried it always in my left breast pocket, all the time I was in the army. And I used to read it in those days, you know, when I had a moment or two. So I showed him it, and he says, "Well, am I going to give you it back?" He says, "I cannot." He says, "I don't want to deface the by tearing these pages out what you've written in." He says, "But well, I'm going to replace it, George, if you don't mind." He says, "I'll give you another one in place." So he gave me another one, which is it has the army, all the red lettering to the BEF, British Expeditionary Force, Bible Reading Fellowship, you know. It's just like, and he gave me not the exact copy, but a New Testament, which fitted in my breast pocket just the same. It was a little bit bulkier, but it was just the same content.
How often did you have church parades?
Well, I think it used to be once a month. Then it got very few and far between after that. We used to have church parades nearly once a month when we were in towns, such as Enstone. Church parades used to have, when we were out on active service abroad and such like. It was very mixed, and not stated when there would be a service. It would be announced when the service. There was no statutory laid down attendance time. You could see the padre at any time you wanted to. You just had to ask to see him, and he would be there. But as far as services were concerned, it was just when things were rather stable and nothing was moving very much that used to hold these church services.
You mentioned censorship there. Did censorship start at this period of time when the war broke out?
It did,
yes. From the very beginning?
Right from the beginning. As far as I was aware, anyway, and I was fully aware of the matter when we went across the front. And that's when it was in January 1940 when we went across the front. That's when the question of censorship really cropped up.
The postal service to you in England before we moved to France, the postal service to you, the mail, was coming in regularly?
Quite regularly. We had no problems before we moved away.
How important to the soldier is his mail?
Very, very important. It's his lifeline. You should look forward to the mail van coming. It wasn't the mail van, it was the corporal in charge of the mail, the post office corporal, used to bring all the bags of mail. But everybody, every day, there was hardly a day passed without anyone not asking about, have you had any mail yet, Tommy, or have you had any mail? Who's writing to you now? And, in fact, I was able to assist one chap in my regiment believe it or not, I wouldn't mention his name, but he could neither read nor write. And all through my time with the DLI, I used to write his letters. And I used to read his letters to him when he got them back. He lived in Birtley. He had another brother who was in. But this chap, he was married. But he had another brother who was in. But this chap who couldn't read or write used to come to me, and I used to do all his writing and reading of his letters privately. But mind, he was a good card player. He could gamble, and he could play a card. Brag was his main game. He always had a fistful of money. He knew how to play brag.
Was gambling prevalent? Because it was against the rules, wasn't it?
Well, it was, in a way, but there was a lot of it went on. It didn't get to such alarming proportions, because the soldiers hadn't the money in those days. The wages were nothing. It could just go up with a certain figure, you know. It was really just mainly a pastime with them. It wasn't a case of dying or greed for money, to my mind anyway. And not that I took any part of it. I never used to take any part in things like that. Not that I was a church lad or not making the church an excuse for not taking part in it. It was just that I didn't feel the inclination to do so, you know.
Were there many liaisons with the local girls down in the countryside that you're in now, the area you're in now?
Yes. I understand there were quite a few. As the progress from one village to another, one town to another, they met different girls, and I think there were quite a few romances went on, and eventually people did get themselves tied up. In fact, my own personal... I had two girlfriends who I was really, I liked very, very much indeed, and they're alive to this day. And I've seen them after I've got back and I've been married, and I've gone and met them. But there was never anything ever became of it, apart from being friends. There was nothing physical amongst us. We were this exactly the same. One girl down in Bridlington, Eatmouth, near Bridport, after we come back from France, and we were stationed down there, which we'll talk about later on. I've got very friendly with this girl, and she was a very, very good friend of mine, and we used to meet regular, and nothing ever, if we went to war, ever happened between us, and we never thought that way. And she used to come, and she's come and saw me off when I went abroad to the Middle East, because she left from there, and she kept writing the whole time, but at the same time, she used to get me to go to her house. I used to visit her mother and father, and I used to have tea with them and the suppers at times, and we used to go swimming together, and it was always a clear understood thing with the mother and father, with me, that we were strictly friends, and that's how it was the whole time we were there. And after the war, I went down, and I took my wife down with us, and we met the same girl, and I introduced them down on the beach at Eatmouth. Now, the other one I used to be very friendly with was the one in the church choir at Enstone. But there was nothing of a romance about our friendships. It just didn't happen so. And we were friends as friends. And this girl lived with her mother, and her father had died just before when we got there. And they were on the farm. And her mother and this girl used to run the farm. And I kept in touch with them right throughout the whole war. And after the war, I also took my wife also down to meet her. And we went in, and I had some of my family with me then when I went down. So there was nothing untoward happened, you know, but we were very good friends. Now, to answer your question further, there was a lot of people who did have girlfriends, and there were some unfortunate things happened. Human nature being what it is. But there again, I'm not prepared to mention names, naturally, because it's not necessary in this discussion we're having. But there was a lot of good marriages made, on the other hand, in the travels. And a lot of them are still together to this day. We met whilst they were away.
By and large, the Durham soldier likes his drink. Is within the local community, in the local pubs, did they behave themselves pretty well?
Well, by and large, to answer your question, by and large, yes. On the other hand, there were occasions when people got too much to drink, and they used to have a great animosity towards another regiment called the Middlesex Regiment. When the Middlesex and the regiment and the DLI met together, the whole town was upset. It was just one. Mainly it started in France, the beginning of the war, when we first moved to France. The Middlesex regiment used to walk on one side of the road and the DLI on the other. And if they all met in a cafe, the cafe was broken up, smashed to pieces. Everything was smashed to pieces in the French cafes. One lot just made sure that the other lot weren't in the same cafe. They could never get on the Middlesex regiment. I don't know why.
I was going to say, was this the north-south divide?
It could be. On the other hand, it could have just happened with three or four individuals having a quarrel, and then the remainder is sticking up for the mates, as opposed to the DLI groups. But the Middlesex regiment was always noted for being enemies of the Durham Light Infantry. The 8th Battalion, anyway. I can only speak of the 8th, because that's the only one I was with.
The winter of 1940-41 was pretty savage. How did you cope with it in those conditions?
Well, the winter of 1940-41.
Sorry,
1939-40. Because it was very savage. Now, we were stationed down south on Exmoor, places like that, and we had an occasion when we did a week's exercises on Exmoor.
Sorry, I'm thinking of the time when you were still in the Cotswolds.
Or in Enstone.
And of course, you had the royal visit in the middle of the winter and so on.
Yes. Well, we didn't have much problem regarding the, because we didn't do much travelling around. The winter in 1940, I cannot reflect any adverse comments being made about the winter.
Do you recall the King coming?
I recall the King coming and inspecting us at Chipping Norton. That was prior to leaving for France. And he came, and it was a nice day that. Well, the day he came, the sun was shining when he came. It wasn't winter weather. It wasn't bad weather. It was rather sunny when he came.
Do you recall when the visit was made?
I can't recall the exact date. No.
Did you see him? Did you speak to him? Did you get close to him at all?
Well, I was as close to him as it was when he was walking past me. That's as close. Well, he didn't stop and talk to me or ask me any. He'd walk so far and stop. But in my case, he didn't talk to me. He just walked past, spoke to someone else, or spoke to someone else further before me, someone else. And he just, like, spasmodically stopped and asked a question.
Did you receive any other high-ranking visitors?
Well, we had various generals used to come around and examine the inspect the battalions. But I didn't meet any at the battalion level. It was after when I became involved with the North African campaign that I met a lot of generals. When I was in the Middle East Officer Cadet Training College in Cairo.
When did you leave to go to France?
We left to go to France in January 1940.
Do you recall the leaving?
I recall the leaving, yes. We left Honiton by train. And
was that particularly snowy conditions there?
Very snowy. Because in my case, I had a rather unfortunate accident. We went to Gondecourt, the station at Gondecourt in France, which is written down here. And at that time I was being promoted as sergeant. I was a sergeant. I was a platoon sergeant. And I was in charge of my own platoon. I used to march them down from the billets down to the school place where we had for a cookhouse, you know, bureau breakfast every morning. We were marching down, and we passed the shops, and there was a big tailor shop there at the corner where we had to turn round, a big tailor shop, very large windows in, and the snow was hard and fast on the ground, very frosty and icy, and there were icicles which were on the ground then, and we used to be throwing snowballs around each other, and snowballing the girls, really. When we got to the tailor shop. There were three girls standing at the tailor shop, shouting at the lads and waving at the lads, three French girls. Now, I noticed this because I was at the back of my platoon, and they were marching in front of me, and I was at the back. And I saw what was happening. And when I arrived up to them, I just bent down, and I picked a lump of snow, as I thought, from the ground, and I flung it at the three girls. I says, "Take that." And they just ducked in there. The snow went through the glass window, didn't it? When it wasn't snow, it was ice. And it caused me such a lot of problems. The shopkeeper came running out, and I was held up. I had to quickly hand over to one of the corporals, let the marching go down to the cook. I said, "Just take charge." I said, "I've got to stop you. I've broke a window." So I had to get a hold of a lieutenant, who was Lieutenant Preacher at the time. We called him Preacher. He used to work in one of the banks in Burley when the war broke out. And he was promoted to lieutenant, platoon, in charge of the platoon. And he came to help me out with my problem with the shopkeeper. And it ended up by me being fined a certain amount of francs for damage to the window. And of course, I couldn't afford any money like that. I never had it. And Lieutenant Preacher loaned me the money to pay for the damage. And all I got was a big laugh from the three girls eventually. We met them later on, you know. Didn't know them personally, but they just kept waving. You know. Used to point at the window. They knew I didn't.
To come back to leaving England from Honiton, you said, in the January, what's your memories of the journey?
Well, this was to go across to France. You know, we weren't really enthusiastic about going. At least I wasn't too keen. You know, it was just one of those things. Well, that's what we're here for, and we've got to go. It was just an automatic continuation of what we had been doing: getting dressed and packing up, and getting into the trains and moving along. And waving to various people, but there was nothing really good, enthusiastic about it. We weren't very enthusiastic to go and get across to France.
Was this because of the area you were living in, or was it concern that you were getting nearer and nearer to an action situation?
Well, I think it was more or less the area we were living in. I don't think it had any concern with nearer the action, because none of us had any war experience apart from training, you know. We had never been in, I can't remember, apart from the elderly officers we had who had seen any. But none of us had any actual war experience. So it didn't cut any ice with us, which way we felt. It was just a matter of getting there and getting settled down and seeing what was going to be what.
It was your first journey at sea, was it not? Getting the ship at Southampton and going...
Yes, yeah. And
was that exciting?
Well, it was just a hustle-bustle. There was nothing... It was just one of those things where it had to be done. There was nothing exciting to me about it. It was just a movement from this country across there with the expectations of not knowing what to expect.
Was it a long journey?
Well, I think it took us about 2.5 hours when we went to get across. I might be wrong in 2.5 hours, but I think it was longer than what it takes, about twice as long as what it takes now to go across. I think it was 2.5 hours it took us to go across. But I think in those times we didn't have to go straight across. We had to work around and go in different convoys and things, because there was such a lot of movement at that time abroad.
Where did you land in France?
I think it was in Dieppe where we landed. And then we went up from there.
What was your first impressions of France when you got into the dock?
The first impressions of France was of a land which was just amazing. A foreign land, of course, naturally, but we didn't know what to expect. We'd never been across there in our lives before. We couldn't speak a word of the language. Our first business was to try and get to know what words were words, and the first thing which ever anybody got to know was chocolate. Wanted a bar of chocolate, you know, and it was chocolat. That was the first word in French I ever learned, chocolat.
What were the French like, the people that you, and the soldiers you first seen?
They were very standoffish when we first, I thought, the French soldiers seemed to be very standoffish to us. At least in my opinion, I might be wrong, but that's the way I felt. And they seemed to keep themselves away from us, keep away. They never seemed to mingle. They seemed to be, to us, or to me anyway, they seemed to be always confined to barracks. They were always in barracks, away from, you hardly ever saw them knocking around the villages and things.
The civilians, were they equally standoffish towards you?
The villagers? No, the they were rather peculiar. They had a strange way of living. We rather used to laugh and turn our noses up at such of the things. For instance, the first place we were billeted at, just outside Gondecourt, was a hall, a school hall, and it had a little coal fire at one end of it, and we all just sleep around on the floor. And at the side of the coal fire, there was a heap of these egg-shaped coals made of spoons, you know, the egg coals for the fire. We used to lie down. There was no coals left in the morning. They all disappeared. And right around the bottom of the walls, four walls, there was a coal mark right around where all the coals had been thrown at one another when you were lying down, just for a height. But to get back to the people, when we were living in these places, the sanitary arrangements were rather disconcerting, because we had a chap standing outside on guard. And he would be standing outside on guard, and then if a woman wanted to go to the toilet, she'd just come out and just sit down at the side of him on the road and just sit down and get away and do a... Not hide, and just sit down and do it there and then. And we used to think it was amazing. You know, we just couldn't believe our own eyes. And eventually, until such time as we got there, we stayed in France a while and got to know how it was. We realised what to expect.